So what's the big problem with wealth creation? How do people like us, who didn't inherit a boatload of money, who are investing and building wealth from our own blood, sweat, and tears, how do we invest in a way that gives us remarkable results and become financially free before retirement age? I don't know about you, but I am sick of hearing from wealth gurus and experts who don't walk their own talk and prescribe strategies that are a one-size-fits-all approach. For self-made people like you and me, I'm here to tell you that you don't need to be superhuman or already wealthy to reach financial freedom earlier than 65. This is the Alternative Investing Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of our podcast. I'm really excited about this episode today because it was definitely inspired during my very long drive between Canberra and Sydney last week, where I specifically went to meet one of my trusted advisors who has a, you know, strategy that they focus on specifically in the alternative investing space. And there was a couple of conversations that I had en route, and there was a couple of people that I met at this investor event that really kind of made me think long and hard about this idea of, should you in fact be looking for killer investment deals? And I'm going to argue in this particular podcast why you should not. And I know that sounds counterintuitive. Certainly there will be people who disagree with me, but I think more than anything, I'm not trying to be polarizing in terms of saying you should step over killer deals, but I'm just suggesting that in the context of your overall game plan for building your wealth with some momentum, that it is not necessary. So that's probably a better way to frame this up. I want to explain exactly why it is not necessary for you to have every investment that you put your money into be an absolutely killer deal. So let me tell you about this experience I had last week, and then I'll go into a little bit about some of the insights that I had gleaned from that conversation, but also from other opportunities that I've kind of looked at over the last few years. So the first comment I would make to you is I met a really lovely couple last week, and you know what struck me about them was that they were clearly entrepreneurs or business owners that had done reasonably well, and now they were looking to take some of their hard-earned capital and park it into opportunities which would provide them with an above-average return and potentially some form of annuity in the form of income streams. They were, I would say, not so much new to investing, but definitely new to the world of alternative. And so for them, the opportunity at this particular event represented what for many investors sounds like the holy grail, you know, an investment where you can be hands off, you don't need to deal with tenants and toilets, and you have that ability to not only gain a monthly income that they can bank on, but also a reasonably healthy capital return each year for the life of the investment. And so I guess, you know, they were such a lovely couple, and it was really lovely hearing about their journey, what they're doing, you know, the stage of life that they're at. But it just sort of struck me that for them, this kind of investment opportunity to some degree represents the holy grail. And, you know, what they were really seeking was confirmation that they were making the right decision. They were certainly, you know, at a stage of life where it did sound like they couldn't afford to put a foot wrong. The investing that they had done to date had been very narrow and deep in terms of its focus. They'd obviously clearly invested heavily in their business and a little bit of commercial real estate, but this was a kind of a move left afield for them. So I guess the takeaway that I kind of got from that is it's really tough if you are new to the alternative investing space, particularly to go out there and find a deal and then think that, you know, you've got to put all your money into that one deal. Certainly what I hope for this couple, and, you know, there wasn't really much opportunity to talk about it in too much detail, but I hope they go out and find a bunch of opportunities that kind of align with what they want and have that ability to diversify, not only from the viewpoint of asset class, but also deal maker, geography, liquidity, all those different things that I think you need to take into consideration. So I guess
the starting point for this podcast is really just as an observer of other investors. I think there's a few keys that I want to really impart on this idea of why you shouldn't be looking for just killer investment deals. And, you know, I think I want to put a big bow on that story by saying, you know, even if they chose to put all of their eggs into one basket, inherently, there may be nothing wrong with that. It might be a complete alignment with their risk profile to do exactly that and put it all on red. But for most investors who have a conservative mindset, as I do, I much, much prefer the idea of taking small bites of lots of different cherries so that if any one of those deals goes wrong, I'm not going to die in a ditch over it. So the first thing I want to kind of, I guess, drive home is that, you know, seeking perfection over reasonableness can really kill the momentum around compounding. And I know this sounds blatantly obvious, but I have worked with a lot of investors who have looked at the various returns available to them, whether it's in the share market, managed funds, or even in property, and they just couldn't mentally do the arithmetic around how to stack their odds in their favor, so they did nothing. And a really great example of this is I've had many clients over the years, and I'm not going to pick on anyone in particular, who have kind of been unable to articulate it, but they've been reluctant to, in their minds, take a gamble on real estate investing. And then years later, they've despaired that they, you know, all of the lost opportunities they could have had if they'd started investing sooner. And this is actually a much more common experience than you might actually think. But essentially, what they hadn't been able to quite work out was this idea that, you know, many times over, they would have told themselves that, you know, the market can't go any higher. The market can't go any higher. And so there was a perceived risk in the market that they just felt that they didn't want to put any money towards or expose themselves. There was no sense that they wanted to add what they perceived that level of risk into their portfolio. So they took no action at all and instead focused on things like debt reduction. So the interesting thing around that is that, you know, where you go into opportunities where there is a level of speculation, and there's no question around that, what you need to really understand is, well, how do I stack the odds in my favor? And this is where I talk about this over and over. You need to have a series of investing rules which allow you to make the best possible decision with the capital that you have. You know, if you don't take action, or if you focus only on debt reduction, the opportunity cost of doing that is huge. But aside from that, if you don't take some action to continue to move the needle, to continue to invest in something, then what happens is at any level, that momentum that comes from building wealth through compounding starts to diminish. And what I've seen over and over again is where relatively good income households take on investments in lumps and bumps and end up with in a situation where, you know, over say a 10, 20 or 30 year period, they maybe just haven't quite achieved the capital or the net worth that they potentially could have if they had just created a regular cadence around just deploying capital into the market. So that's my first comment. I think you've got to avoid seeking perfection on every deal and focus more on, is this a reasonable return that I can live with and therefore continue to move the needle in and allow compounding to do the heavy lifting for me? So that's the first, I guess, thing that I want to focus on. The second thing that I want to mention is that looking only for killer deals by yourself is really hard work, particularly when you are focused on efficient markets. So this has certainly been the topic of past podcasts for me, but one of the things I'll just do a quick recap. One of the things that really blew my mind about why I was able to get much better returns in the alternative investing space was that they are very inefficient markets. And particularly, like, you know, most of you guys know that my preference is to only focus on real estate backed deals in the alternative space. And why I love it is that it's a very inefficient part of the market. And when we look at our local market here in Australia and many property markets around the world, a lot of the local residential real estate has actually over the last two, three decades become increasingly efficient. And when I say efficient, it doesn't mean that there are not opportunities to make money, but it's really hard to find those killer deals where you can, you know, hit a home run every time. And so if you are only looking for killer deals, then again, you end up in that situation where maybe you cannot take action on a consistent basis. And therefore, again, you start to erode your returns. And, you know, the real kind of key takeaway that I want to emphasize on this point is that even if you're working within efficient markets, you've got to find a way to give yourself a competitive edge. And in recent years, regardless of the sorts of investments that I'm taking on, whether it's alternative or traditional real estate deals, I keep coming back to this whole idea of build relationship capital. And I'll give you a really good example of where my attempt at this hasn't even been that enormous, but it's certainly my starting point when I'm looking for any kind of investment opportunity. Let's say, for example, I'm looking for a development opportunity. I will, you know, aside from the fact that I'm going to do some research on which area do I like, why do I like it, what is happening, is there good population growth, are the returns sustainable, you know, does that market have a good probability of performing in the future? All the usual stuff that everybody talks about. But then I start to focus in on who are the movers and shakers in that market? You know, who can I talk to? Who's going to be informed? Who is potentially going to have access to the sorts of opportunities that I'm looking for? And I just get on the phone and I just make those calls. And it could be that you don't necessarily strike gold straight away. And the worst part about all of that is, you know, if you're someone who just wants to cut to the chase and talk to the person who's going to supply you with your deal, you know, I think that's the wrong approach. I think the number of people that I just have a 2-minute call with or a 5-minute call with, and if you can connect at, you know, a deeper level, if you can be really authentic, if you can actually genuinely be interested in what they do, what they're trying to do, you know, how they go about doing their work and what's happening, and you don't waste people's time and you're respectful of the skills that people have, then you can actually find yourself building even what I would call a second tier level of relationship with people who will remember you to some capacity and then bring you deals as and when they come up. The other experience I've had is, and in fact, my husband would say to me that I've done this a few times over the last 25 odd years, is I meet someone and I just genuinely really like them. And so I find that even in a kind of a competitive environment where there are lots of people vying for a deal, sometimes just having made the effort to build a little bit of a relationship with someone means that an agent may in fact be, I don't know what the word is, and this is kind of a bit of a softer, less quantifiable perspective, I suppose, which is they want me to win the deal. So they almost go out of their way to help me or support me. And, you know, I love to think that the universe conspires to, you know, bring you the people into your life as and when you need them. But I genuinely feel that, you know, it is by really having authentic curiosity, authentic desire to meet and connect with people, not on the superficial, but at a deeper level, that you can get these points of inflection. And, you know, to be frank, the best, most recent example of this for me was I was looking for a development site 18 or so months ago. And I just started to chat to people who were in the market that I wanted to be in. And sure enough, I found this relationship with this real estate agent who I just really clicked with straight away. And in fact, long after the transaction has been complete, I actually still have a keen desire to stay in touch with this person. And if I'm in town, I would actually look this person up and go and meet them for a coffee. So yeah, that's the kind of, I guess, competitive advantage that I have found. I certainly didn't craft it from a strategic point of view. It's more that with the benefit of hindsight and also probably people around me commenting on, well, crumbs, how did you do that deal? That I've realized that if you are looking for killer deals all by yourself and you're doing it through the lens of maybe looking online or going through forums or, you know, relying on the network you already have, you are severely, I guess, stunting your ability to cast the net wider and bring in what I call off-market opportunities, meaning deals that don't necessarily even make it onto mainstream internet. So, yeah, that's my second key. I guess my original thesis for this podcast was why you should stop looking for killer deals. But I guess I want to add to that is doing it by yourself is really, really tough. So that relationship capital is super, super key. Finally, the third key that I want to really focus on today is this idea of contrasting returns. If you are only looking for investments that you perceive to be killer home runs deals every time, essentially what can often happen is you can look at an opportunity and inadvertently choose it because you perceive it to have a better return, rather than what I think is a better focus for sustainability and longevity as an investor is focusing on predictability and sustainability of the returns over time. So I guess the point I'm really wanting to drive home here is if you have two opportunities that you are presented with or that you narrow down to that you have side by side, I guess the lens or the overarching mindset that you should cultivate is that you are in it for the long game. And you need to remind yourself that you are seeking momentum over the long term, not just a small return in the immediate term. And I'll give you some examples of where I have seen people kind of play the short game is if there is some incentive that the government put in place that is, I guess, a way of opening up a certain sector of the market. So an example of that would be there was a lot of government housing support for people with disabilities. And I knew a lot of investors over the last 5-7 years who bought into it because it was this amazing short-term incentive. And depending on which state or territory you were investing in, the incentives had a finite life. And added to that, the banking environment shifted and moved away from interest-only loans. And so what happened with a lot of these investors is, you know, they were really thrilled with the returns in the first few years, and then shifting sands in the banking environment and a move to forcing them into principal and interest repayments, along with the subsidies or the incentives running out, left a whole raft of people carrying substandard real estate deals in markets that weren't actually growing all that successfully and with a caliber of tenant that was problematic in terms of, you know, higher ongoing maintenance and so forth. And so, you know, if I'm contrasting deals, I mean, obviously you want a threshold return, which you will not go below because obviously that's just the math of it. You want to get that right. But I will always choose, you know, the returns that I perceive to be in line with my risk appetite that are going to be sustainable. If there is a shift in the market and if particularly in the alternative space where, you know, your time horizon on some of these deals is maybe 2 to 3 years. So you could argue that I'm taking the short view, but what I'm looking for is the sustainability of the returns, regardless of market environment. And I'll give you a quick story of one of my beloved clients who, when he first started working with me, was kind of like in a, you know, a business which was very labor intensive, demanded a lot of his time and energy. And so, you know, he kept saying to me, "Selena, just tell me what deal to do. Like, just tell me where to put my money." And I kept circling back to you're building a pipeline of returns and you're building relationships which are potentially going to last you for the rest of your life. This is not something that you want to focus just in terms of returns, because essentially what, you know, he was talking to me about is just tell me which ones have the highest returns. That's all I want to know. I don't care about anything else. And it's really through a series of conversations that I think he realizes now that focusing only on the returns is a very one-dimensional perspective as an investor. You know, I think sustainability over time is far more important. And I think, you know, during our time together, he certainly shifted his perspective and realizes that there are so so many other variables that he needs to consider when he's thinking about what investments to take on. So they're my three keys. I'll just do a quick recap for those of you who feel like I've meandered down too many little rabbit holes today. I truly believe that, you know, seeking to hit a home run or find a killer investment deal time after time is, number one, it's unrealistic. And number two, it can really jeopardize your returns over the long term. And my three, I guess, key points that I'd love you to think about is, number one, if you constantly seek perfection over what I would describe as reasonable returns, you will kill the momentum around the compounding of your wealth growth. The second thing is, if you are only looking for killer deals and you're doing it by yourself in efficient markets, which I believe most, you know, residential real estate markets, for example, are very efficient. And I contrast that with alternative real estate opportunities where I believe the markets are very inefficient, which is why the returns are so good. But you have to build relationship capital as soon as possible, because that is what is going to deliver you the pipeline of opportunities, even if you're only doing one deal at a time. And then the third and final point that I've made is that when you are contrasting deals, when you are contrasting returns, you need to focus on sustainability over just the pure mathematical numbers and play the long game. So that's pretty much all I wanted to cover today. I'm really loving the feedback and communication from you guys in terms of topics you want to hear more about. This podcast is really turning into an amazing passion project for me, and I'm really, really grateful for all of the kind words of support. Till next time, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Alternative Investing Podcast. If you're feeling frustrated that despite doing everything right in the property investing playbook and you're no closer to financial freedom, then head on over to IncosiWealth.com to learn more about how you can use alternative investments to catapult your investing income and blend strategies to shave decades off your timeline to financial freedom. See you on the next episode.